I just wrote on my CV that I baked. I did heaps of baking. I was a baker. I had my own business when I was in university. All these things. And it was literally me baking a few cupcakes just because I'd watched The Great British Bake Off that I got obsessed with. I decided to sell some cupcakes on the weekends. It was nothing. And then I was so good at bluffing the interview that they loved me and they hired me that day. And then I just had to bluff my way through. And then my boss quit. And then I became head baker all in the space of 4 months. Before I started doing cakes, I had like nearly 20 years of singing, opera, rock, musical theater, everything, sung Latin, everything. It was just the whole shebang. I was all for it until I got to 20. We had agents come to us once and they looked at all of us and they told us what we'd have to do to our appearance to make us marketable. For me, he basically bluntly said I'd never have a leading role because I was too tall. And he said to cut off my hair and to dye it brown. I don't know. He said all these things, the usual to people, lose weight, be this size. It was horrible. I told my partner that he wanted me to chop my hair off and he said, just quit the industry now. It's ridiculous.
Now let's talk about that cake you're about to go make, maybe even while listening to this podcast. I want to know what you're going to present it in. A basic box with extenders wrapped in cellophane? I really hope not. There really is a simpler way to go about this by using Alba tall cake boxes. They're super strong, luxurious, they assemble in a minute with no extenders, no cellophane, and no fuss. Best of all, you get peace of mind when you hand it to your customer for its journey home knowing it will arrive safely. You've just spent hours making that cake, so why not present it in something that shows it off? Check us out at www.alba.com. Shop. Australia, England, Australia, England. Kendra Groves has been bouncing back and forth with her husband between these two distant countries, navigating her way through life and baking her way through most of it. She's in Manchester now, in case you're wondering. She's originally trained in musical theatre and opera, but trying to get somewhere in that industry just proved to be too difficult against many odds. Her passion to be creative, though, has always been there, but it wasn't until she started baking that she realized she can keep that creativity going and make something of it. Kendra, she's so vibrant. She's always in bright colors, you know, no matter what time of year it is. She's super bubbly as well. Just watch her videos on social media and you'll instantly see what I'm talking about. That personality is just really addictive to watch, and she has a great knack for keeping you entertained in any video that she creates. While she's a content creator by night, she still works as a chef during the day, so balancing that can be a bit challenging. How does she do it? What happens to keep her inspired throughout all of this? And does she even have any black or grey clothing in her wardrobe? Keep listening to find out and hear more about Kendra's very inspiring baking journey. Kendra, super excited to have you on. I have to start with something that's a little bit not baking related. We are recording this on World Cocktail Day. Did you know that, Rach?
Cheers, everyone.
She's prepared for this.
I feel like I've really missed out. Kendra, I have started this new obsession with making cocktails and doing mixology.
Yes.
It was my New Year's resolution. I know a lot of people decide to quit drinking. I decided to...
More drinking.
Yeah, I tried an amazing recipe last night. It was lime, basil, ooh, and cucumber, muddle.
Ooh.
Yeah,
with gin
and tonic water.
So good, honestly. So good.
That sounds delightful. Just cucumber and gin is like my favorite combination.
Oh, it's so good. And then you throw in like the basil and...
Oh, that's so nice.
What have you got there, by the way?
Whiskey sour.
Beautiful.
Oh, very love nice. It.
I'm a big whiskey girl.
I love it.
That's fantastic. Sorry, we're not... This is still a baking podcast called My Baking Journey. It's not my cocktail journey, but...
That'd be a good one.
We may fork one of those...
Off. But half, I think that just shows the creative types, they span into many different areas.
It's so true. And you are seriously mad creative, right? Like, it's just not, the way I describe it is, it's so you that it's the norm for you, but for most other people, it's a totally different level in some cases, not quite understandable, right? Yeah, I'm sure even walking around the US or something like that in Florida, where you were, where I was there, obviously, with you a couple of weeks ago, I'm sure you got some, like, quirky looks or awkward.
Yeah, I'm used to it, though. Like, lots of people online don't know that I'm, like, 6 foot. Even before I started dressing like this, I was 6 foot and blonde. Like, I've always got stairs, so I'm kind of used to it.
Yeah, that's all right. That's all right. We'll get into all that later. The creativity bit, though, is the cool bit in terms of defining who you are, because you don't learn this creativity to the level that you take it, because I see it in not only just how you like to dress, but how you do makeup, how you create content, how you create cakes. I mean, it's so entwined throughout.
Yeah.
And I would love to just get a bit of an understanding of what you were like as a little girl, if this creativity was there early on. And what did you create when you were a little girl? Like, and who influenced you at that time? I don't know.
Oh my God. Tell us. I don't know who influenced me as a child, but I was a crazy child. I was I was like this little blonde, crazy ball of, I don't even know what, but yeah, I was always creative. I loved reading and stuff as a child. I had a really big imagination. Like, I had imaginary friends. I kept to myself, like, I liked my own company, and my parents were always astonished that I could keep myself amused for hours on end. I could do anything. Make up stories in my head and stuff. And yeah, I've always had a massive imagination and dressing weird ways. Like, my mom, I wanted to wear a box, and I wore a box for a whole day to primary school. That was great. And I refused to wear anything else, but I wanted to wear a box. And I was stubborn, but just growing up, my imagination just ran wild, and it just kept getting worse from there.
Do you have siblings as well?
No, I'm an only child. Yeah. So, like, my parents, they were like big in the corporate world. So they worked a lot. They ran hotels when I was little. So I had a weird upbringing. So I lived in hotels. I thought it was normal up until I was 15, but then I'd bring friends over and they'd be like, oh, you live here? I'm like, yeah, let's go to the kitchen. And I'd introduce them to the chefs and stuff. And to me, it was completely normal. But obviously, my parents, we lived where they worked. So I had to keep myself amused. But not in a sad way. I like really enjoyed it, and I loved my own time and stuff. And I was a great child.
Well, you would have been hanging around adults a lot too, right?
Yeah, most of my friends were like adults and stuff. And I just ran around. Like, the hotel was like my kingdom, and everyone knew it.
Did you move around a bit? Was it the same hotel or?
Yeah, we moved around a lot. I moved everywhere. Like Tassie, we lived in Tassie, and we actually lived in the oldest hotel in Australia, which was a beautiful hotel, completely haunted. Won't go into that, but it was a beautiful hotel. I've lived in Cairns. I've lived everywhere in Australia. Been really lucky.
Living in a haunted hotel with a crazy imagination is just not a clever idea, is it? It just
I loved it.
Oh my gosh.
You probably had lots of friends there, right?
So many friends.
I can totally see it though. I can. And you're right to think that's the norm.
Yeah.
Until people come over and go, what is this? And things spread from there.
I just think that kind of skill of moving around a lot, there's probably like a lot of pros and cons with that. The pros being able to adapt to move and make friends very quickly and in different environments, especially when you're younger.
Yeah.
But I guess it got a little bit harder when you're in your teens, and then moving around comes a bit more difficult.
Yeah, luckily, when I got into university, my parents decided to stop moving, obviously, because they did not university, sorry, high school. And we just decided to stay in one place, which was great for me, because at that point, I was quite bad at making friends for obvious reasons. But no, I thrived. And obviously, and then I got into theater and stuff like that. And then that went from there.
You studied theater, you trained.
Yes.
And Broadway ambitions, possibly, and everything else.
Everything. I think before I started doing cakes, I had like nearly like 20 years of singing, opera, rock, musical theater, everything, sung Latin, everything. It was just the whole shebang. I was all for it until I got to 20.
You did that studying here in the UK, or part of that in the UK?
Yeah, so I dropped out of school in grade 9 and went to an art school. I auditioned and got into an art school, and that the equivalent for a high school. And then I applied for schools over here for university to do my degree over here. So I did a 3ABA in musical theatre arts.
Why the UK?
I always wanted to go to the UK. My dad's Scottish, so I could get a passport. And I was just always fascinated with England. I was not built for hot weather. I just do not like it whatsoever. I've never liked it. I just really wanted to go. My parents said, you can go. And my dad said, just do me one thing. Just make sure you don't find an English boy and marry him. Oops.
So it could have been a Scottish.
Yeah, that I think my dad was probably happy that he was British. But yeah, and so I was very headstrong at the time too. And I was like, oh, dad, please. I want to be on stage. Like, I'm not, no boys. I think I met my husband the second week that I was in university, like the second week I landed in the country.
It's so cool though. Like everything that you wanted didn't happen.
Yeah.
Effectively, all the plans, all that didn't come about. But your career never took off in theater. You know, I hate to say it so bluntly like that, but that's obviously where you're figuring out, okay, what the hell am I going to do with my life?
Yeah.
Were you doing shows? Were you doing performances?
Yeah, I was actually quite good. I was a high soprano, which is actually quite hard. I was very good at what I did.
I worked very
hard to be a high soprano. And I was really good. But the thing, it wasn't the talent that stopped me. It was the passion at the end of the day. Like, it's so competitive theater that if you don't have the passion to get through the hard points, just like, what's the point? And I just got to the point where I was like, why am I making myself so miserable? Like, I get anxious. I love the singing part, but there were so many other like attributes to being on stage, like the acting, the dancing. Wasn't the best dancer. And I just made myself miserable. And I just said, I'm only going to live once. I said, I don't know why I'm making myself so miserable. I just don't love it anymore.
Yeah. How old do you think you were when you came to that realization? Because it's quite a hard thing to see, right?
It's a hard thing to go through, especially I did it for my whole life. And obviously my parents were like, you know, lots of parents were like, I want you to get a real job. But my parents were always like, do what you love. And I did love it for so long. So I think it probably went on longer than I would like, just because I was like, I didn't want to tell them. But I think they could, when we moved back to Australia for a few years, I think my dad could see that I wasn't really into it. Like, he saw me in person when we were on camera and I was overseas. He could pretend that I might want to still do it. But when we moved back to Australia for a few years, I think they could see that I didn't have the same passion anymore.
I have no experience in this. Half did. He did amateur dramatics at high school.
Nice.
But it was dramatic. That's for sure.
I even filmed a movie, but you'll have to.
Yeah, that's another podcast. I went to LA and everything for that. Yeah, it was great.
But I'm guessing there must be a lot of criticism or critique on you and your performance and how you look and a lot of quite personal. It probably can feel very personal. You have to gain like a really thick skin.
Oh, I got such a thick skin. I think it's now why like social media doesn't hurt me too much, because I grew up with directors, teachers. We had agents come to us once and they looked at all of us and they told us what we'd have to do to our appearance to make us marketable. For me, he basically bluntly said I'd never have a leading role because I was too tall. And he said to cut off my hair and to dye it brown. I don't know. He said all these things, the usual, to people, lose weight, be this size. It was horrible. I told my partner that he wanted me to chop my hair off and he said, yeah, just quit the industry now. It's ridiculous. But yeah, it was horrible. I think I did one audition in London at Pineapple Studios, which if you're in theatre, you know that Pineapple Studios is the main where they do all the West End auditions. And I remember we all lined up and they'd weigh you in front of everyone.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
That was fun.
What year are we talking about?
2015.
Wow, so that's not very long ago.
No, and they still do it because you got to be able to fit in certain costumes and dancers have to be a certain weight and stuff. And yeah, it's just a whole thing. And it's a horrible industry unless you like the leading role. And then that's really competitive. So what's the point?
It takes away the passion for it though, doesn't it? Because of all the other stuff, just the exterior stuff and the things around you. Like, to really get to go far, you have to probably been had so much criticism, critique. The average person would never go through that.
No.
Yeah.
Even if you're a leading role, and let's say you skip because you're sick a couple of days and someone else steps in, you're probably just absolutely worried that they're going to come out just better than you. And then you're fearing your own.
It's a very, very competitive market, and I'm a naturally very sensitive person. Like, I put on a persona online, but I hate criticism. I'm horrible. I'm a very sensitive person. I take everything to heart. I just don't tend to show it. And it wore me down so much that it wasn't making me into like a good human being. So I just thought to stop.
I'm so sorry that you went through that, Kendra. It's horrible.
It's awful.
We're here now. It's all
yeah,
good.
Yeah, exactly.
But this helps us go into the next chapter of your life, right?
Yay.
Yeah. Yeah. But you're forced into the baking side, not in terms of looking for baking, but you're like, you were just looking for a job. Right?
Didn't you bluff a job and say that you...
I'm so good. Like, my mother, bless her if she's listening, she is the queen of bluffing. And I grew up watching her on the phone in business, because she was like, back in her day, like, obviously women in business and stuff, it wasn't as big, but she was self-employed, like her own woman. So I grew up watching her bluff her way on phone calls and deal, not lying, but she was so good at it. And I grew up watching her like that. And then, yeah, so when it came to me being in London, I was auditioning for stage roles. We needed to make money because we had just left university. I just wrote on my CV that I baked. I did heaps of baking. I was a baker. I had my own business when I was in university. All these things. And it was literally me baking a few cupcakes. Just because I'd watched the Great British Bake Off that I got obsessed with, I decided to sell some cupcakes on the weekends. It was nothing. And then I was so good at bluffing the interview that they loved me and they hired me that day. And then I just had to bluff my way through. And then my boss quit. And then I became head baker, all in the space of 4 months.
Madness.
Yeah, it was fun.
So you literally went from making a couple of cupcakes on the weekend, just like a hobby baker.
Yeah.
Then into bluffing this role to become an assistant.
Yeah.
Having, what, 4 weeks, 6 weeks?
Just 4 months. 4 months.
4 months.
Roughly. Yeah, 4 months. She was training me and I was just bluffing my way through it, working like 13 hours and stuff. And to say I had no time for auditions, I was just all into this job. We were baking, just me and her, we were baking for 2 cafes, so 2 bakeries. We were baking everything ourselves in a tiny little kitchen. I think my kitchen was like a meter, the bench space I had. And then, yeah, she quit like 4 months later and they didn't hire anyone else. And it was just me baking by myself for 2 shops.
What kind of things were you baking?
So the cafe was called Ginger and White and they had their own cookbook and stuff. And so they had all their recipes. So it was very classic British, like carrot cakes, lemon drizzle cakes, cookies, cupcakes, all the nice things, banana breads. I made like 50 banana breads in the space of one day. It was crazy. And it was fun though. I loved it. And I got to experiment Mondays. My bosses let me have experiment Monday. And I got so into the baking role and I used to experiment and then put stuff out in the shop on Mondays that I had just developed myself that day. And the regulars would come and eat them and stuff. And it was great. I loved it.
It's probably really good therapy, actually, and distraction from turning your head away from one thing that had been your passion and where you thought that you would always go. And then actually throwing yourself into something which is like 16-hour days, still very creative and still making stuff. It was probably quite good to have something just to throw yourself all-encompassing into, right?
I think it was definitely good as therapy because I was in a kitchen, not by myself, but I was surrounded by really nice people. And in the kitchen, you're not on the main stage, so to speak. You're behind the curtains. And it was just so nice to be in my own world for a bit and just to like hyper. I'm a very hyper-focused person. So I was hyper-focusing on baking, making things, and probably shouldn't be working 13-hour days with no food and just like 6 coffees.
A bit of sugar for the cakes.
Sugar everywhere.
Yeah, a bit of sugar. Like, I will not lie, at the end of the year, my health was not fantastic. And it's one of the reasons we moved back to Australia for my health reasons. But I loved it. And I just, that's definitely where my baking took off.
So how many years did you put in at this bakery before moving back?
We only lasted a year in London. It was my partner. So he had a business degree and just obviously business finance degree in London, very competitive. And he found it really hard to get a job and stuff. So my parents, who were self-employed at the time, we have a big business in Australia, basically offered him a role in the company. So we went back to Australia, which was good because we had just got married. So we got married, had our honeymoon. And while having our honeymoon, we just kept flying and then landed in Australia.
That's so good. But was it a bit weird to come back for you, because it's like you left and now you're back.
Like I said, the year in London was very hard for me. Like I had some health things. I pushed myself a bit too hard that year, like my wedding day. I developed sounds horrible, but I got this weird allergic reaction, like a rash all over my body on my wedding day. And it was from stress. And I remember I went to the hospital and he thought I was in the army because my feet were just killed. Like they were horrible. And I said, no, I just work in a kitchen. He said, oh, same thing. Cool. Yeah, I get it. Like you could just tell that I was worked to the bone. I was just so tired and I was ready to go home. My family, we live in Noosa now. So it was just sunshine, pool, beach. We took a month off and stuff and just recharged. It was amazing going home. I really enjoyed it. Just very hot.
Yeah.
Lovely part of the world out there.
It's really pretty Noosa. I love Noosa.
It's just not the best if you're not into hot weather. This is your challenge, yeah. Right? Can't have everything, Kendra.
No.
you're back in the UK. You've been back for a couple of years, right?
A year and 4 months, I think. Yeah.
So you were still drawn to come back here. Your husband's British. Obviously, for him, was it an adjustment for him to go work out there, do you think?
He really wanted to move to Australia. We both did. It just made sense. And obviously, being my family lived on a big farm, so they had property. So it was a time for us to recharge, to save money, for him to get some work experience, because that was the only issue he was finding over here, that obviously people out of university, it's so hard to have experience. Obviously, it was benefiting everyone. And I was also going to work for the company too, but I'm not a corporate person. So that didn't really pan out. And I got bored a year in and found a baking job. So
at least you had a go at it, because you'd probably always think, what if, why didn't I take the opportunity and see, does that environment suit me? But obviously, clearly wasn't.
Your parents probably knew the whole time as well. It's probably not going
to
be.
I think my mom really, in her mind, really wanted me to take over the business. But like, in the family, I'm the most creative. I'm like the black sheep. I could never quite fit in the box. So we tried. We all tried really hard, but I just didn't work, didn't plan out. That's fine.
Okay, so you've come back to the UK and your mind is still back on baking, right?
Come back to the UK, but come back to Salford, no less, right? Is that where you went?
No, technically I'm in Spinningfields. I'm right on the border. So the border to Salford is, I'm right, my building's right on it. So we like to say Spinningfields. So we're technically the centre of Manchester. That's what we like to say, yeah.
Great place to live. I grew up about 20 minutes away from Manchester.
Really? So.
Yes, she did.
Yeah, no.
She did. More countryside, less urban, but still very pleasant.
Yeah. Best of both worlds, I think, out here. I think it's beautiful and it's very beautiful today. Blue skies for a change.
I was going to say, the weather's perfect for you up there because it's generally cooler and
it always rains, right?
I love it. I love the rain so much. It's my favorite weather. I was made for Manchester.
You were. They should really hire you as the brand ambassador. Yeah. Have your face up at the airport when you land.
Fantastic. You must be the most colourful person in Manchester as well.
I am, like, in winter. In winter, I don't know what happens, but like a big switch goes off with English people and they just all whack out their grey coats, and I'm just like, I've got a bright red one and stuff and a bright pink scarf, and it's, no one tends to wear bright clothes. I'm seeing a few bright clothes now, but I work in the northern quarter. So if you know Manchester, you know the northern quarter.
The creative area.
Yeah. So I walk into the northern quarter area and I kind of like, oh, okay, I can relax now. No one's staring at me. So it's great.
I've got my tribe.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so cool. And this is where you are. You're a head baker at a cafe okay.
Yeah, that's my daytime job. So full-time. I don't talk about my full-time yet, but I'm still full-time as a head baker in like a dessert cafe in the northern quarter.
How does Wild Child Cakes fit into all this? Like, how long has that been going on the side then while you've been doing all these other gigs, really?
Yeah, Wild Child Cakes is, I started it like, the older I get, the more I forget. So I think it was like 7 years ago. Basically, like I said, when I decided not to work for my mom anymore, I just got bored and I started to post stuff online, cakes online. And that was more for fun. But then I actually got certified and then started to sell them. And I've been making cakes and selling them to clients for around 7 years. But it slowly has developed into more of a personal brand. I love doing cakes and I will do cake orders and stuff. It's just, I'm on like a new path where I'm starting to just, it's more become like a personal brand, and balancing it with my full-time job is no easy feat. It's very hard. Yeah. It's very hard because like when we lived in Australia, obviously we all worked from home. I worked from home. So I was basically self-employed. And it was much, much easier. I knew when we moved over here, it was going to be a bit harder. I knew I had to get a full-time job. And yeah, I think I've done pretty well in a year though. So with how far I've come. So I'm proud of myself, but it's definitely every day. I don't get a day off basically, but that's okay.
You should be proud of yourself. Your history of what you've done online and what we can see of what you've done online is you're super consistent in terms of the level of creativity that you've put out from day one. We've gone back and looked all the way back, back. You've gone full on creative mode from the very beginning, when I bet very few people really bothered to go to the lengths that you did even when you first started posting stuff.
Instagram happened first, right? And that was your cake page. And then TikTok, I think where I was going back, it was April 2020.
Yeah, lockdown, right?
Yeah.
Yes, like 7 days
in lockdown. And you,
I got really bored. I told you, I hyper-focus on things and we were locked in a nice country. I can't even say we were like you guys, but I got very bored and I couldn't, all my cake orders got cancelled. And I had a friend who lived in Noosa as well, and she's very big on TikTok. She's got 2 million followers and stuff. And she was like, oh, you should really give TikTok a go. And I was like, oh, I'm a bit old. Like at that time, it was just like a bunch of 16-year-olds and stuff. I was like, what can that do to benefit me? And I got really into it, posting some god-awful stuff. I don't even know when it truly started to get popular, but I had so much fun on the platform. So here we are.
Yeah. It's so cool though. You've gone through a lot. People change a little bit over time on when they put so much of themselves online, right?
Yeah.
You're opening up more about yourself. You're far more comfortable about showing yourself, putting your face.
Yeah.
You progress. You quickly start showing yourself in front of your TikToks and your voice. And there's that correlation to when the personal you shows up, all of a sudden more people are interested.
Yeah.
Which is probably not what you wanted at the beginning or what you thought might happen, but you just start rolling with it, right? Because more people follow along.
I loved it so much. Like I said, I was always a bit, not weird looking, it's not weird to be 6 foot, but obviously coming from a hypercritical industry beforehand, then I was like, oh God, so woe is me. But I was bullied when I was younger. So I just like all that kind of stuff. TikTok, it gets such a bad rep, but for me, I had a great experience. Yeah, there were a few trolls and stuff on there, but people, the more I showed of my personality, the more little snippets I gave, everyone was like eating it up. They loved it. And people were like agreeing with me, like loving the stuff. They related to me when I was sick 2 years ago. I was in the hospital a few times, all these things. And it just, I slowly got this like little tiny community. And it was just, I love it on there. If you find the right people on there, they're just amazing. And it's such a more, you can express yourself so much more on TikTok. And I've evolved with it. And I'm just like opening up more and more. Even now, recently, I've started to hit a new kind of path in the TikTok where I'm starting to do a bit more like organizing with like how I shoot things and the more stuff I show outside of the kitchen and stuff. And it's just, everyone's loving it. It's been fun. I like it.
I want to talk about cupcake boxes, especially if you need room for tall ones or floral cupcakes. There's never really been a cupcake box on the market that gave you the confidence to safely transport them without damaging them. Nor has there been anything that makes it easy to place or remove cupcakes without ruining those pretty decorations. Until now. The Olba cupcake box fixes all these issues. Plenty of height, strong, and a gorgeous cupcake box that opens fully into a built-in serving tray. No mess, no fuss, no cupcake teeth, and no damage. Even your customers will appreciate just how easy it is to open the box and serve right from the tray. Check them out at www.olba.shop.
I think it's what's also really cool is you call out those trolls or when they do say things to you that are quite hurtful and you actually expose them for it, right? You actually say...
You got to do that. No, I had so many cake friends that have said, oh, I don't want to go on TikTok, even though I tell so many people. I think I was talking when we were at the cake expo in Miami, I met like Lima Cakes and stuff. Sonia is her name. But I was talking to her about TikTok and stuff, and like she's massive in the cake industry. I'm like, go on TikTok. Everyone would love you. And she was like, no, I'm too scared to go. I'm like, no, do it. I'm like, honestly, the trolls, they're nothing. At the end of the day, they're probably like a 15-year-old, 14-year-old. But yeah, I do call them out. But that's because I've had far worse. Like my teachers, my directors, like it's nothing to me if they critique my voice or how I pronounce something on TikTok or my teeth or is anything. Like it's nothing and I don't care.
The most interesting one and most bizarre one was about your tongue.
That was weird.
How does anyone even see this kind of stuff?
That was horrible for me though, because I'm a slight hypochondriac and they were like, I made a funny video and everyone's like, my God, I think you should go to the doctor. That's like a condition. And I'm like to my husband, it's a condition? What is this? And I was Googling like ridges on tongues. What does that mean? And then I spiraled and I went to my doctor and they're like, oh, maybe. I'm like, oh God, Jesus, I'm dying. No, it was fine though. I probably just bite my tongue in the middle of the night. That was nothing big. But yeah, they pick up on the most random things on TikTok, which is great. It's fantastic, but it can make you spiral slightly. You just got to go with the flow.
I'm going to go to, there's two avenues that I want to explore with you. One is the cakes and one is obviously like your TikTok journey.
Yeah.
I also read as you were going along making cakes that you got annoyed that in your opinion your cakes were not as good as others, so you took some time off to just let yourself grow in the style that you wanted, because you were like copying, like we all do, like other and comparing yourself with cakes to other cake artists.
Oh yeah, everyone does that, don't they? Like obviously I think there's two different cake decorators. They're the ones that like we just want to make money, not necessarily like it's a job, like you want to just create the orders, get the inquiries and stuff. But I started it as a creative outlet, so that's always the avenue I went down. And obviously I followed all my favorite cake decorators and that was great for a time. I was recreating their work. Like I have a very inquisitive mind. Like I'd see a decoration on a cake and instead of asking the decorator, how did you do that? I would try to Google it and research it and work it out. Gelatin sails and how is that shiny? How does it, like just how my brain worked. And for a time that was great. Like I would recreate it, be really proud of myself. But then I got bored and then I started to try to do my own stuff and it just wasn't quite clicking. And I'd look at all my people I looked up to online and stuff and they were just, I just didn't feel like I was good enough and stuff. And I wasn't standing out. Not that back then being like big on social media, like it wasn't a thing to be a content creator or to get lots of likes and lots of views and lots of followers. That wasn't really a big thing. But back then it was just getting recognition from other cake decorators. And I wanted to be different. So yeah, I unfollowed all of my favorite cake decorators on Instagram. Yeah, it was one day I was just like, I'm going to unfollow everyone. And just, I think I took 4 months out where I was just not on Instagram to like research, but I went on like Pinterest. I looked at just non-cake related stuff. And I just slowly, I don't know if I have a style. It's really hard for, I think, cake decorators to say if they have a style or not. So I can't say if I have a style.
You definitely have a style.
But I just started doing things that I wanted without any influence from other people, which I think was my goal. And then I came back and yeah, I started posting that. I started to do cake collabs, which is a big thing in the cake world on Instagram. It's like, you all get together on the same day with a theme and you make a cake. That was a big thing for me. I loved that. That was really good for my brain to work on themes. I would have a whole calendar of like, I'm doing a collab that day and that day and that day. And that's how I made lots of friends too. Then I started posting photos with my cakes. And then that's when it really took off, so to speak. But yeah, I just had to step away from other influences for a bit.
I think that's a really important message, actually, just to, because there is that comparison nature. It's natural. We compare ourselves, everything. And you go on social media and it just, you go there for inspiration, but you're also then, it can be a dangerous hole of, I'll compare, I'm not good enough. And like those messages that you actually tell yourself, and taking some time just to explore your own creativity, especially when you are very creative yourself, then copying someone else is never going to fulfill that creativity in you. And you have some amazing styles. What is it? The surfing guinea pig.
Surfing guinea pig, yeah.
Yeah, the sushi cake, the 80s inspired Mario cake, your groovy satin cake.
That was great.
Sushi cake.
Honestly, and you use so many different mediums of them. I'm like, that's so cool. Like, spaghetti. You use lots of different things that I'm just, I think there is a style. And it's like your brain, actually. It's almost like that creative energy is actually on the cake.
Yeah, my brain throws up on it, as my husband says. He's the one who has to tell me to stop putting decorations on a cake. Yeah, I think that if I can say I have a style, it's that in my brain, I have to have at least three mediums. I could not just do those vintage piped cakes at the moment. Couldn't do it. My brain could not comprehend just piping buttercream onto a cake. Though I say that, I have, but then I play with it with my hands. That's anyway. So it's like, I need to have like lots of things, and I got to have height, and it has to be on certain sides of the cake. I do have a process, but I'm so in the work that it's hard to step back and see the style. But I just, I like lots of stuff on it.
But that's fine. This is your learning journey, and everyone's got to have their own process of how they do stuff. I watch Rach, the way she puts a cake together over the course of, let's say, 2 or 3 days. And the style that she generates as that, and how she gets to that, it makes sense as she gets to like the end point from the path through it, right? Like she goes through her certain process on this day, does that. So I get it. I understand. And everyone's got a different approach to this. But the cakes that you end up creating, like I'm looking at them at the finished product and I'm going, okay, what did you do to get to that? And then I have to go back and watch obviously through the video to understand, because you're very good at documenting.
Yeah.
How it all came together, especially your fake cake that you practice on.
The one that lives in the fridge.
Yes.
Love my fake cake. Still doesn't have a name.
Still?
No, it doesn't. Still hasn't. No,
what version fake cake are we on there?
So I shouldn't probably know. Should I? No, no one needs that. Second, maybe. Second. She might be 6 months old. In my defense, though, the buttercream, the fat protects the inside.
No one's going to eat it though.
Yeah, no mold whatsoever. It's great. Yeah.
You've attempted just to like try a bit. Just
I have cut it before and seen the inside of the cake and gone, oh wow, it's still like soft. That's just my fantastic recipe though. So you know that.
It's brilliant. It's totally cool just to have that.
Yeah.
And also just show that as well. If look, I've got a cake that lives in my fridge and I reuse it and it's not a dumb.
So many people do it though. Like so many content creators. Obviously, I don't take on as many cake orders as I used to because I just don't have the time. So I have 2 different cakes in my fridge, 2 different shapes that I work with. And I need that because I don't have time. These days, I don't even have time to physically decorate. Like it's very hard for me to do that as well, but I find the time. And yeah, I definitely, everyone, so many content creators use fake cakes. They just don't tell anyone.
I should congratulate you because you may have a little bit of extra time being freed up because you now have a talent manager.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, no, that's exciting. I was really excited about that. I think I signed with the week I was in SoFlo over in Miami and stuff. And yeah, that was one of my goals. I always set up my goals for the year and stuff, and that was one of my top goals. So I'm very excited. I'm going to London next Thursday to go to Meta. So that's going to be exciting.
Excellent.
I'm really excited. It's going to be fun to see what we can do, and hopefully I can be self-employed one day. Soon, that'll be great.
You never know. But tell us, SoFlo, because it's very recent in your mind, you were invited over there to run the social media stage and coordinate everything was there. And obviously saw some very interesting people. She got to meet Ellis Rach, the caking girl, the 5-year-old superstar.
She's gorgeous.
Baker. She's amazing. Being invited to go do something like that, how did you feel when you got that? Were you a bit like, I don't know? Or
it was crazy. Natasha, one of the owners, she emailed me like 8 months ago or something, because I didn't realize she had, because SoFlo It was one day SoFlo started following me back because I make a thing to follow all of the big cake shows I know in the world and stuff. So one day, maybe. And I just said to Dan, I was like, oh my God, they started following me. And to me, that was like the highlight of my day. I was like, oh my God, they started following me. And then I had an email and it was from Natasha, who was the owner. And I didn't even realize that she had been following me on her personal account for ages. And she was like, I love you. I love your stuff. I want you to come over. I saw that you recently moved back to the UK and you're closer. And she's like, I just want you to be involved in whatever capacity you want. She was amazing. They were both amazing. Like, I actually came up with the social media stage. Like, she basically just gave me the reins and was like, whatever you want to do, do it. Just have at it and stuff. She was just so excited to have me like involved. And me being me, I just tried to do everything. I was like, yes. So I just created a whole stage. And it's been, the last 6 months have been exhausting, stressful. And to anyone who does it as a full-time job, I commend them. But it was amazing. It was like the best experience ever. I loved it so much.
It's very cool. Yeah, we were actually on the same flight on the way back. They were sitting, her and her husband were sitting a few rows ahead of me. But it was, you probably at that point, you were like, okay, I'm done. Oh, I need a break.
I'm so glad you weren't next to me though, because I had a massive panic attack on that flight. I'm not a good flyer.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I was probably asleep at the back, to be honest. I would have slept through it.
Let's I wish I was. Did you sleep through that whole thing?
Absolutely. I'm very good at sleeping on planes.
You can sleep anywhere.
The buckle thing went off so many times. I have a fear of flying, so it was not fun for me. That's probably why.
It was a little bumpy. Yeah,
Yeah,
that can freak out.
Kendra, I know you talked a little bit in this conversation about you're managing effectively two full-time jobs and what looks like to anyone that might look at your TikTok feed as, oh, Kendra just posted a video, is actually probably hours and hours of work, both planning and then preparing that script and what you're going to wear, your makeup and how you're going to, and several different cuts of videos and edits, post edits. So what I'm really intrigued about you is like, how do you go about this process? Is it quite random or is it, do you try and think, oh, I've got to do this at least once a week. I've got to pull something together.
I should be more organized. I should plan. And now that I have my agent who are basically going to help me brainstorm and come up with ideas and avenues so I can get to my goals and stuff. So that's fantastic. But at a point now where I am, I make it all up on the spot.
Yeah.
It's great. So like on Sundays, I try to film as much as possible. It never always happens because I just want to relax with my husband and stuff, but I do try to plan it. Planning, I think, is the biggest thing for me. If I plan, and at the very least, I work out what I'm going to shoot throughout the week, that makes it easy for me. But in terms of planning, not as big a planner as you might think. When you see me on the camera, I'm actually wearing what I wore to work. Usually, ironically enough, I do dress like that at work. My boss is very accommodating. He does not care.
I think it's great.
He loves it. He tells everyone like about my TikTok. He knows. So I dress like that. So usually you'll see me in my work clothes. I might touch up my makeup depending on how tired I am. And in terms of scripts, I make it all up and I probably do a few takes. I've been doing TikTok enough now to know what catches people's attentions, what things I should subtly slide in to get random people arguing in the comment section, clickbait, all that kind of stuff. I've worked out what to say, but I don't plan as much. I think it's why sometimes people might see my stupid videos and be like, oh, she's making it all up at stage. No, I actually act like this in real life. I always like, someone said the other day, like Carly Cupcake, she was commenting on my video saying, I don't care about the cake. She's like, it's just the faces that you make. And they're completely and utterly natural. I said to her, I said, I would be shit at poker because it's all on my face. I make the stupidest faces and people find it funny. But yeah, everything I do is quite natural, actually. I think when I film, because I work till like 4, I come home. We're in England, so I have very little light. I have about 2 hours to film. Yeah, spend that time. So yeah, I usually spend like an hour and a half filming. not long. And then I sit down on the couch and I quickly edit everything before my husband gets home from work, quickly do the voiceover. I just want to be able to shut off by the time he gets home. So really, it's actually highly unorganized and rushed. And that's my style, kind of like my cakes.
Yeah, but messy. I think, I don't know about you, but do you struggle planning? Is planning quite something that, you see, I struggle with planning and I like to just wing it or have some loose plan, and actually sitting down and scheduling something or focusing on something is not a natural state for my brain. So I just wondered if that is the same thing for you. And actually, if you have it too scripted, it probably doesn't flow naturally because you're like, oh, I should be doing this or I should be doing that. And
I'm not good scripting wise. I think I did scripts because I have some content creator friends and stuff. And someone said to me once, oh, script it. And I scripted one video and I was just like, oh, it just doesn't feel the same. Like, people find it more funny when I get distracted and I say something on my voiceover and stuff. And people find that funny. But yeah, I'm horrible at planning. I'm horrible. Sometimes I'm like, I loosely plan. I'm like, oh, I'll definitely do that on Monday. But the thing is, I don't. And I know I won't, but I have this conversation with myself and I'm trying to convince myself that I will do it. I won't. So it's not a natural thing for me, but I know if I do plan, my content's better that week. So I might be a bit all over the place when I'm filming and stuff and doing the voiceover, but in terms of working out what I'm going to do for the week, I think at the very least, that's the most important thing I do. So I definitely have to plan. Like, tomorrow I'm doing something for a magazine and I have to do that. I can't be distracted by that because then I'm screwed for the rest of the week. So I have to force myself to do that and then I'll just wing the rest of the week. But, you know.
Do you enjoy it?
I love it so much. It's different every single day. And now that I have an agent, getting random messages going, hey, let's go and do this. You want to do this? It's fantastic. My brain needs constant stimulation. I don't know what that is, but it's great for me. I love it. Every day is different.
Yeah. And you don't actually have, it sounds like, a lot of time to go look at what other people are doing now for inspiration, except for maybe an odd cake trend or something like that.
Yeah.
Or someone might tag you in something to go check out. And then obviously it's brought to you. But it's not like you have hours on end to just sit and look and search and look for inspo and things like that. It's flipped itself around now and you're the one just creating it instead.
Yeah, I really do want more time to create, though. I think since this year, I really went to focus on like my personal career and stuff. And there's like a big balance you have to find, that focusing on you or your cakes. And I've pushed the cakes not to the side, but I've focused on me to make myself a package so that I can have the space to start to create. So I'm really hyper focusing on trying to get myself marketable, all that kind of stuff, so that I can work for myself. And then when I have more time, then I can really start, because my brain, it's full of stuff at the moment and I really need time to shove it onto a cake or explode.
Put it into something, right?
I got to do something with it. But I don't have time at the moment. Like, Sundays is my cake decorating day. And it's just, you can't do a proper cake design in a day. Like, I like a few days to really have at it. And I just don't have time at the moment. So I'm doing quick things at the moment. Like, if you go on my Instagram now, I got like a margarita cake and I literally
half decorated.
Don't look at the back of it, guys. Yeah, I have no time to cover the whole cake, but that like literally took me 30 minutes and like I did it well, but like I was just experimenting. I was playing around with stuff and I knew I wanted to use a product that I got sent. And I knew that it was cocktail day, so I had to get it done and I had to take a selfie with it. And I'm not rushing my content at the moment, but I'm just trying to keep up with it in as nicely done as possible.
But I think what you built as part of your brand could take you in many different avenues, right?
Yeah.
Part of me always thinks about your fashion, what you're going to turn up on. And like the cakes in my mind are part of the narrative, but they're not essential. It's not like it's all about your cakes. It's all about a lot about you and yourself and how you dress and how you appear and what message you give out, and you have the cake. So I think you could go in so many different avenues.
Yeah.
And it's just allowing yourself that freedom as well, just to go, all right, let's see where I like. And maybe having a really diverse portfolio is the best thing for your brain, actually, just to be pulled in.
Well, yeah. I think there are so many things I want to do, and I love cakes. And I think the cake world can have, I want it to become like so much more and stuff. And yeah, and in terms of myself, I want to market myself in so many ways. Like, I think in theater, they said that you should always be like a triple threat. And it's always been in my brain this whole time that not only can you be talented, but you have to have the spark and you've got to have all these things. So you can be an amazing cake decorator. Like, God, I am awful compared to most, but you've got to not be afraid to put, if you want to be like as yourself, a personal, like a cake decorator, like in the spotlight, you've got to be happy in the camera, be happy to talk on stage, be happy to present, do videos and things like this, talk on podcast, like you've got to, and have a little spark and have something different. And like I said, my brain works in the way that I'm constantly thinking how I can just make myself a little package, little 6 foot package. You know, you got to think long term. So I don't want to have that perfect little cake shop where people come in and buy cake. I want more. And I think cake can do so much more. It's not just one avenue for cake or sweets or anything like that, or cooking. Like, I love all of it. So just always thinking 10 steps ahead.
We've seen it. I won't say who she is because it will come out later, but we interviewed yesterday another Aussie cake maker, massive social media following. And it was just a lot of fun. And we just learned a lot from her. And it just goes to show, you're right, this is a lot bigger than just what you see in front of you. There's so much more. And I think you're probably inspiring girls of all the ages, young, middle, old. It doesn't matter, because I just think you're appealing to different age groups of what you're interested in. It has a connection to someone else. So I think that's really cool. And then that already puts you outside of just cake into this whole personal brand and makes it more marketable, more sellable, more approachable, and more interesting.
It's next generation, isn't it? Like, I'm not saying I was like back in Australia, I wasn't the next generation, but in terms of like Cake International, the cake show, it was at the time run by the old generation from me, and all us younger cake decorators were coming in, and we've hit like this crossover period where half of the cake decorators like, ew, social media. Ugh. And the rest, we're like, no, do it. It's like the new generation, they want to learn and stuff. And you just got to keep updating for them. And I get, so many. I think I've got like so many little girls follow me, and little boys, on TikTok and stuff. And like, I've got like little fan pages from it. It's so cute. And there's such a big like generation, they want to learn and stuff, but you just got to do it in a different way to keep them engaged and stuff. So things like fashion and things like that, you just got to keep updating it, but still coming, I always try to still come back to the cake, because that's my main love and focus, but just showing it off in different ways and stuff, because it's all creative.
And your cakes, I know you just put your cakes down about a few minutes ago in this call, but I must say, in 2021, you got Australian Cake Decorator of the Year Award. Now, you don't get that for making naff cakes. You get that for making amazing cakes and for pushing the boundaries and challenging the status quo, right?
Yeah.
And so that must have been a massive accolade for you to have got that.
That was really big. And that was literally right before I moved to England and stuff. So it was a big thing. It was a big award for me to bring over with me. And yeah, I honestly didn't think I would get it, but I honestly do think it's just because I was doing something different at the time. I got Buttercream Artist the year before, but then I got nominated for both of them the second year. And I was like, oh, might get Buttercream again, but I couldn't possibly get Kate, which was the main one. And then, yeah, I got it. I was like, I still keep it on my page, because I still to this day, I'm like, how did I get that? But I think it's because I was doing something different at the time, and it just made me stand out, because I just love
because your cakes are amazing. That's
I just love buttercream so much, and I just want everyone to love buttercream as much as me. So
but did you ever try fondant or ganache? Or
I play with it, like I like textural, like making figurines and stuff. Obviously fondant in Australia where I lived was horrible, don't do it. would not recommend. I did try modeling chocolate, so I probably could get into ganache and stuff. Yeah. But
and also you had weather to deal with there, like heat and humidity. Just
yeah, if you're in Tassie, so it would have been all right, but the Anusa is not going to happen, right?
No, so much humidity. But I did start to get into different forms. I think if I wanted to get into it, I would want to learn from someone, pick a cake. I really want to do some masterclasses with some people I look up to and learn maybe fondant, because I think that would be interesting to learn and my brain might pick up on that and just go with that and stuff. But I don't have a big enough head to think that I could do it myself. So I'd rather have some professional teach me and then I'll play around with it. But buttercream is my favorite. I've got my own recipe. I like playing with buttercream and it tastes good.
It's almost like Play-Doh, right?
Exactly, exactly.
It's so cool. So that just leads me to ask you, what do you see happening next for you beyond obviously having the talent management helping you out and doing things like that? But, you know, down the road, are there any areas where you see this, your brand going that might, that you want to explore more? Or
what's keeping on your vision board?
Yeah. Oh my God. Oh God. I believe in jinxing things. I always tell my mom, which famous, I'm like, don't jinx me. So many things. Like, obviously I've grown up in the spotlight, literally. I don't know. I think when I was little, I planned a lot. So I had a whole life plan as like a 12-year-old girl. I knew I was going to do, and that didn't quite work out for me. So really planning so far ahead has never been my forte, but there are so many things. Like when I was over at SoFlo, I was picking the brains of all my friends who had been like on the Food Network and stuff like that, been on TV. And I really want to look into that. So yeah, just putting it out into the universe. There, like, right? My dream would be to have a show on BBC Foods where I just travel around and eat sweets and go back to my kitchen and do sweet and then do shopping. And there's so many things. Like, yeah. So
brilliant.
But also just getting more into the cake community here in the UK and stuff. I'm trying to get into the shows over here. I'm hoping to be involved. Just make friends, make connections. Like, it took me 7 years in Australia to create the community over there and I loved it. And so I'm just trying to create my community again over here and at the same time maybe get on TV. Just small little dreams, you know.
If your manager is listening right now.
Oh, they already know.
I have no doubt, Kendra. I've got no doubt. I'm sure.
Yeah, something will happen.
I don't think it'd be too far away.
No, no. I tell you what, it's been really, really nice to chat with you. We like finishing off with our little quick fire round of questions. First thing that comes to mind, you can explain it or you don't have to. It's totally fine. I'm going to go first. I think we know the answer to this, but I am going to ask buttercream preference, American, Swiss meringue, or you say your own?
My own. So yeah, I make a Swiss meringue without eggs. I call it water buttercream. Some people know what it is, but it's basically just like a high fat ratio American buttercream because I don't like it crusting. And then I don't like playing with eggs because obviously I was always worried about eggs for like orders and stuff. And it was just an extra process I didn't want to stuff around with. So I used powdered egg whites at one point,
yeah,
putting it in with icing sugar, water, butter, silky smooth.
Amazing.
I've not heard of that one actually.
I'll give you the recipe. Just message me. It's really good.
It's just really fascinating. It's a new one.
It's a great way to get around the cost of living ingredient. Oh,
yeah.
Crisis,
oh my God.
Right?
Yeah. Eggs. Know? Don't even get me started. Jeez.
And butter.
And butter, yeah, of course. Butter. All right, Rachel, you go.
One aspect of bacon you won't compromise on.
Color. I can't do a white cake. If I do a white cake one more time, I'll. Oh. Wedding cakes were the worst for me. Back in Australia, I had so many semi-naked white cakes with natives.
It's just not you, natives, though, is it?
And, mate, it just paid the bills. And I made it as beautiful as possible, but it just
killed you inside.
Killed me slowly, every cake.
Oh, I can so see it. I can just so see it as well. You know, you're like smiling, but you're not really smiling.
Dying on the inside.
All right, how about a baking book from your bookshelf?
Milk Bar, Momofuku. That was like, I grew up when I got into baking, when I first started out in London, I was obsessed with Milk Bar and stuff. And how, like, we're, me and my partner, these aren't quick fire rounds, I'm just explaining everything, but me and my partner are really into like Michelin star restaurants and things like that, so we've traveled around the world. That's a whole other story. But this, but desserts have never been a big aspect if you go to these fancy restaurants. And Momofuku, they actually tried to make dessert something. And then she took off and created Milk Bar, which is like in New York and stuff. And I just found it fascinating how she had so much fun creating flavors and crack pie, if you've ever had that, or like just everything, how her brain works. I was like, yes, great minds. Like, that's how my brain works. So that's my favorite book. Everything she does is amazing. Crack pie is so good. You should try it.
I'm going to have to go look that one up.
Do it.
I get so many book ideas from this podcast. Wow, actually, it's amazing.
My favorite book.
I think I know what you're going to say to this as an answer, actually. So let me see what you answer first, and I'll say, yeah, I think you answer the same thing. Who would you want to make your next birthday cake?
Oh, God, anyone. Anyone. Like, to be fair, like,
I've got someone in mind that I think that you would have.
Oh, really? Because as a cake decorator of like 10 years or so, 10 plus years, like, I've never actually had a birthday cake. Someone actually asked me this the other day, and I was like, I've never had a birthday cake before. I've made my own birthday cakes. So I don't know.
And you make your husband's birthday cakes, obviously, for his work, because of his work tradition.
Yeah, that was weird. But they
really I'll tell you who I had in my head. Catherine Sabbath.
Oh, yes, that's a good one.
Oh, go Rach. Well done.
She's got to be an inspo for you, right?
She was my main. She, not that I copied her in the slightest. We just have the same taste, but oh my God, growing up watching her, she was like a school teacher and stuff. And then she just quit that all to do social media and stuff. She's amazing. Oh, I love, she follows me now. We had conversations. I love her so much. Yeah. Good choice. Good choice. I just love
just
her.
Just I see your style and I see hers and I was like, oh, they.
You know, she invented the drip. Like the drip, like
I didn't know that she invented the drip. She's a legend.
She invented the drip because, like, back when I used to like research everything, you know, when she did her first ever like the ice cream cake.
Yeah.
So that's where the drip came from. When she first did her ice cream cake, if you know her iconic cake, it was the drip. Oh, it was the drip from the ice cream, and then everyone just started to do drips. And yeah, isn't that so? That's amazing. Yeah, she was one person that made me like want to, when I was obsessed with like creating my own trends and creating like new cake techniques and stuff, that story has always stuck with me. That something so simple, now everyone does, and it's so big that you don't even remember where it comes from. But
it's like the cartoon cake, right? No one knows where that started.
But I know. I think it would have been like Korea or somewhere.
The first place we saw it was out of the Middle East.
Yeah.
Believe really?
Or not. Yeah. Yeah.
They got some talented bakers out there. Yeah. So it was not really surprising.
Not surprising. Look, I have one last question. Sorry.
Yeah.
Give us two Michelin star restaurants around the world that you'd recommend that you've been to.
That's a good one. Okay. Tokyo, guys. Den, which is awarded one of the best restaurants in the world multiple times.
Amazing.
And you actually can't get a reservation for it. You need to be recommended by someone who's been. So if anyone's listening and they want to go, let me know.
Yeah, we know somebody who's gone to Den.
Yeah, exactly. You know someone now. I'm going to get so many emails now. No, that was amazing. They have a little chihuahua as their mascot. It's the chef's dog. If you've seen my photos, we went and met him, Poochie. And he just sits there all night on a chair while you eat your dinner. And
yeah,
stuff.
You went before lockdown kicked off,
it
right?
It was literally just a few months. So that was good timing. So yeah, so that was an amazing experience. And where else? Oh, El Celler de Can Roca, which is in Spain. So it's just outside of Barcelona in Girona. Again, awarded one of the best restaurants in the world. And it's 30 courses.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a long night. And I got the wine pairings. So 30 wines.
That is mad. The most I've ever done is 16 courses with alcohol. And they gave us a bag of tea that they made for the hangover cure the next morning.
Oh,
this was in Singapore.
I did not. Oh, Singapore has some really good restaurants.
They
we really want to go to Singapore. Yeah, that was a lot. And my partner, ironically, doesn't drink. So he had one beer the whole night.
For 30 courses.
He just watched me. He's very good at keeping that drink going. They were amazed that he kept it going for so long. And then water. And then his wife next to him, just on her 26th glass of...
Living her best life.
And they were old too. If they're old wines, it's even worse. I was very happy by the end of that, but surprisingly not hungover the next day. I think it's like good quality stuff.
Yeah, something. Or something in the food. Who knows? The water there. Amazing. You never know. Or just because you're on holiday, you know, everything's different, right?
Exactly. But I will say, I was really excited for El Cella de Can Roca because it's run by three brothers. One does the wine sommelier, one's the head chef, and then the other brother is the head patisserie. So they do the whole thing.
Oh, wow. Cool.
But the head dessert, I really wanted to meet him. He was the one guy who wasn't there. And his desserts are just like, again, the way his brain works is amazing. It was like some of the best desserts I've ever had. We had one called Book, and it just tasted of, and I love reading, and it just tasted of like, it sounds horrible now I'm saying it, but it tasted of book pages. It was really cool.
Oh, thanks, Kendra. That was awesome. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. Kendra. Thank you for having me, guys.
So, of course, we'll chat with you soon.
And that wraps up episode 18 of My Baking Journey. Oh, it's so good to be back in season 3. Really hope you enjoyed that episode. We love talking to Kendra. She's just so much fun. If you want to know more about Kendra, check out the show notes and you'll see links to everything you need to find about her. And please don't forget, rate our podcasts, follow or subscribe. Just hit that button in your favorite podcast app so that you always get notified. But the more people who do that, it helps us in more ways than you can ever imagine. We're back next week, so don't forget to tune in. And lastly, just remember, this podcast is brought to you by Olba. Packaging for bakers designed by a baker. See you next week.